You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all you wonderful F1 fans out there. If you are hearing my name, that could only mean two things. One, that it is Sunday. Two, that it is F1 weekend, that my name is Kelsey, and you are listening to another episode of F101. We are starting off the hot topics today, unfortunately, on a little bit of a sad note. Yesterday, Red Bull co-founder and owner Dietrich Mateschitz died at the age of 78. He is credited to bringing Red Bull to North America. He is also known for bringing the Red Bull Racing Group to Formula One. They began as a sponsor before in 2004 when Mateschitz bought Jaguar Racing back in the day for the record amount of $1 American. That's right, $1. He bought an entire F1 team, rebranded it, relabeled it as Red Bull Racing as we know it now in 2004, followed up by the sister team of AlphaTauri in 2005, followed that up by he also bought the racing F1 track in Spielberg, Austria, also now known as the Red Bull Ring, which now hosts the Austrian Grand Prix. So our thoughts and prayers go out to the family and the friends of Dietrich Mateschitz, as well as it weighed heavily on the thoughts and minds of all F1 owners, drivers, and fans around the world. Moving on with the hot topics today, another bit of sad news, not bit of sad news, definitely sad news. The W Series, also known as the Women's Series, has been canceled for the rest of the season due to financial difficulties. So a little bit of background. The W Series is the Women's Series for F1. Now, the cars are not nearly as fast as F1 cars, but it is still held on the same tracks, generally the same weekends, and brings in the same amount of fans. Everybody loves it around the world. It's great. They were to have a record 10 races this season. Unfortunately, after 7, one of the sponsors had pulled out, which means that they were no longer able to race the last 7 races of the year. Jamie Chadwick is the 2022 champion with 143 points. She did win this in the 5th race. So there is no question on you get an honorary championship or, hey, you won just because we ran out of races, but you have enough points. Jamie Chadwick did win the 2022 championship. Congratulations to her. But to me, it's really sad to hear not only that they were not able to finish the series. I mean, it's only 10 races. But it's very upsetting to me that at the beginning of the season that F1 had stated this massive promotion that racing is for everybody. All colors, creeds, ethnicities, you know, orientation, all of it under one umbrella. F1 is for everybody. And yet the Women's Series was unable to finish 10 races. That's it. Just 10 races because one sponsor dropped out because he didn't have the money. They said they were going to pledge the money, but they never got it. It's kind of like Amber Heard. Well, I pledged the money, but no money actually exchanged hands for them to finish off the rest of their season. I think as much as F1 on the face of social media said that F1 racing is for everybody or that motorsports is for everybody, they didn't really put their money where their mouth was, that if they were true that racing is for everybody and that everyone's welcome, that they knew the financial situation of the W Series, and they should have been able to put the money together to finish 3 more races. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard for the F1 teams and the FIA organization in general, because they know what's going on, to support women's racing, I think, and to support all racing, not just women's racing, but F2, F3, E-Series, all of that. They should be able to divvy up the finances and help everybody race whoever wants to, wherever they want to, no matter the popularity of it. If you're in the organization, you should be able to race. This shouldn't be negotiable. This shouldn't be a second thought. If they're in trouble, you help them out. You see that racing is for everybody, that racing is inclusive. Well, apparently it is, unless you need money. Therefore, you're on your own. I think the FIA really needs to sit back and look at, you know, where their money's actually going, and if they can actually, you know, say what or do what they're saying. If they're saying racing is for everybody, then put money towards other organizations to help them grow like F1 has. It's not just the big boys that get to race. It's not just the rich guys that get to race. Racing is for absolutely everybody. No matter your financial situation, whether it brings in the ratings or not, it doesn't matter. If it's under your umbrella for racing, you need to support it no matter what. So, like I said, unfortunately, the women's series has been canceled for the rest of the season. They are only got 7 races out of 10 in, but they did be able to crown a championship, or a champion, I should say, which is good on that part. Hopefully next season, the FIA will pull their heads out of their asses and they'll be able to bring up the money to help support women's racing and not just rely solely on other sponsors. And on a much, much brighter note, moving forward from here on out, Williams have filled in their last driver spot. Congratulations. They are filling it in with an American driver. Now, this is not Colton Herta that we have been talking about a couple weeks ago. He will not get enough points on his supercar license to go from IndyCar to Formula One. He is out of the conversation. He's out of the picture. Forget about him until at least 2024 if he does well enough. Williams have secured, under certain circumstances, Logan Sargeant, 21-year-old Formula 2 driver. He is contractually a Williams driver. He does practicing and simulation, all that kind of stuff, as well as driving in Formula 2. So he has been signed to the 2023 spot. Now, here comes the special circumstances. Because he's still driving in Formula 2, he needs to finish out the season, and you need 40 supercar license points to be able to drive in Formula 1. As of right now, he has 30, so he's 10 short. But he needs to finish 6th or higher in the last 3 Formula 2 events combined. So if he just does, you know, top 10, period, he's going to be really, really well, preferably top 5, he's going to get the points, okay? As well as that you also get supercar license points granted the more you do practice laps for the team that you've signed with. So he signs with Williams. So there's still Mexico and Abu Dhabi left for him. He will be doing practice laps as well as like technical laps, figuring the cars out and getting the practice time in. He needs to pull in 100 kilometers between Mexico and Abu Dhabi penalty free for both. That's it. That's all he has to do. He has to drive 100 kilometers, so 50K per place, 50K Mexico, 50K Abu Dhabi, with no penalties. He just needs to stay in the track, not crash, not hit anybody, and just drive properly, and he will get his supercar license points to be able to drive in F1 for Williams next season. So there's not a whole lot that I do know about or that I was able to find on Logan Sargeant, except that he drives for Williams, and this is the points that he kind of needs. He's one of those under-the-radar type drivers, from what I've been able to find, at least, from the testimonials from his drivers and from Williams and from himself, obviously, that he is one of those, he's not that flashy driver, but he's that really super consistent driver. He's going to get you the points, and he's got fantastic potential. So congratulations to Logan Sargeant. He will be, hopefully, a Williams driver in 2023. I cannot wait to see what he's able to do. Next, Haas finally has a new major sponsor. Now, this was kind of in the works from the beginning of this season, but very, very much under the radar. Haas doesn't usually like to share a lot of information unless it's actually true or it's a little bit of a little cat and mouse. Is it true? Is it not? We're going to hide a little bit, but the announcement comes up, you know, the next day or two. Well, they kept this one definitely under wraps. They've signed a 3-year deal with a major sponsor. It is the Texas-based MoneyGram International Company, obviously U.S.-based. What these guys do, what I've been able to find, is they're an international person-to-person money transfer organization. So that means if I'm doing a major purchase, especially for companies who, you know, buy goods and, you know, exchange money for it, obviously, that they are able to go, it's kind of like a personal pay plan. I'm able to pay this company directly, and you would go through this company. You would go through MoneyGram International. They will change the colors of the Haas for next season, although because it is an American company, you would go with American colors, which is red, white, and blue. Haas, obviously, right now is red and white. They took the blue out just because they got rid of the Russian sponsor at the beginning of the season. So I would expect a more detailed paint job on the Haas next year. Definitely, the sponsorship helps them bring them closer to the actual cost cap, and it takes a lot less takes a lot more stress off of the major sponsors that they have now. So congratulations, Haas, brand new sponsor, three-year deal. It's a legitimate deal. It's legitimate money going into the organization, going into the car. I expect them to take massive steps next year with all this money with new development. Congratulations. Now, going back to Japan, last hot topic, second to last hot topic. This is one of the more controversial ones. This is also one of the more encouraging ones that I've seen. You remember last race in Japan, there was an incident where there was a recovery vehicle on the track with Pierre Gasly on the track, and it was a massive controversy and very dangerous effect that there was a car on the track or a recovery vehicle on the track while there were still racers out there. Well, it turns out that the FIA finally has some teeth and they did take actions, and by this, they have fired one of the race directors. Now, normally, you only have one race director for the entire season, but the FIA tried this new theory out that you would have two race directors that you would split the races for the rest of the season or throughout the season, because there's over 20 races, you know, give the guy a break every other week you work, which seemed like a fantastic idea until something like this happened. They found there wasn't enough consistency in the race director's rulings, and which meant that unfortunately, because of this circumstance and this unacceptable circumstance and unacceptable decision that was made in Japan, that one of the race directors was sacked. The FIA was going to a one race director for the rest of the season, three more races, which shouldn't be too hard. Mexico next weekend, then Brazil, and then Abu Dhabi. So it's not a massive workload, but I think the experiment succeeded for the most part. I don't know. There hasn't been an announcement what the FIA is going to do for next year. If it's still going to be two directors, if it's just going to be one, if they might bring in more stewards to help with the workload, just because some of the race directors, depending on the race, they are super busy with making decisions. And sometimes the decisions just take way too long to make, like we've seen this year, which is why, in my opinion, we've seen so much inconsistency this year, is because one race director looks at it, you know, A, B, and C. And then the other race director looks at it as X, Y, and Z. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have two race directors that are not on the exact same page that judge and rule the exact same way. It would keep things way more consistent. I'm hoping by next year, they've got this figured out so you don't have decisions coming 4.5 hours after races. I mean, that's just totally unacceptable. Everybody's gone. Everything's turned off. Everyone's relaxing. And then all of a sudden, you've got more decisions coming out that affect the races and the racers and the points and everything along that line. You're just like, where did that come from? Why did it take you so long to get this figured out on sometimes pretty simple situations? So one race director for the rest of the year. I'm hoping that he stays consistent, whoever the race director is. I do hope that they continue with the experimentation of how many race directors they do need to get more consistent decisions throughout the season. Let's see how that works. Moving on, last topic. We're bringing up the budget cap update. Now, it's an update, but it's not an update. The FIA still, and I mean still, has not made a ruling on what the punishment for Red Bull is going to be. Reportedly, there's a number now. Reportedly, the breach is no more than $2 million. Okay, so that's still less than 5%. But still, $2 million is a ton. That's a lot of, you know, air tunnel time. That's a ton of development time. That's a lot of employees that you can pay for $2 million to get you that extra step to beat your competitors. But still, it's just a report of $2 million. It doesn't actually mean that it is $2 million. It doesn't mean that it's $8.5 million or $7.5 million, which would be the 5%. Like, there's still absolutely no consistency at all. So you're looking at me going, well, this is not much of an update. We know this already, except for the $2 million. So here's the thing. In this circumstance, the FIA has approached Red Bull with an ABA, and that's an accepted breach agreement. So that means, and this is all behind closed doors, which irritates and frustrates the living crap out of me, that Red Bull and the FIA will go behind closed doors. And essentially what it is the FIA is going, hey, you either admit that you did something wrong and your punishment will be behind closed doors. It's kind of like a sealed record. No one will absolutely know about it. It'll just kind of disappear with the wind. No one will bring it up again. It'll just go into history. Now, if Red Bull goes with this decision, There will be no official report. They'll just pay it and it'll just move on. This also means that if Red Bull accepts it, that there will be no points deducted from the team or from Max Verstappen in the 2021 race. And that I will actually mean, or that will also mean, there is no budget cap restrictions. So they won't take that $2 million off of, you know, take any kind of development for next season. I think, and this is within the minor breach. So what they define as a minor breach for the FIA is a 5% overspend, which would equal $7.25 million. That's, like I said, that's a ton of money for a ton of development, a ton of employees. I think, in my opinion, and some people agree with me and some people don't, that's fine. In my opinion, and let me know what you guys think in the comments, this deal, if FIA does this and Red Bull accepts it, this is absolute bullshit. I am a Red Bull fan. I freely admit it. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a Red Bull fan. But I have been in amateur sports long enough, and I have the integrity that if you cheated, and you should get busted for it. If you cheated, everybody knows you cheated. The FIA has come out to say you overspent, which means you cheated. There should not be a backroom deal. If you cheated, everyone should know how much you cheated by and the penalty. Don't hide this shit. This is such a massive gray area, and this is such an overstep, and this is such cowardice from the FIA because you're punishing one of the top three teams. Oh, boo-hoo, big fucking deal. This is when you need to make an example of Red Bull. And yes, I am a Red Bull fan, but you still need to make an example of it because cheating is cheating, and cheating is unacceptable. If you broke the rules, you need to be punished for it, especially in sports. That's how you keep it a fair playing field. There's a reason why you brought a budget cap in. So if Red Bull can go over by $2 million or $7.25 million to stay in the minor breach category and they don't get publicly punished for it, then what's the point of the cost cap? You'll go behind closed doors. You will go on sealed record going, yes, we broke the budget cap, and then you just move on. That's absolutely not right. You need to be punished. You need to be punished so the teams can see that the budget cap is in place for a reason. And if you break the budget cap, you're going to be punished. Other than that, what's the fucking point? Why don't we just go back to the early 2000s, or you go back to even 2019, where you know Mercedes was spending $380 million on development, way more than anybody else. Why even have a budget cap if you break it and there's absolutely no punishment? There's a slap on the wrist because you're an important team. Who gives a shit? The bigger the punishment needs to be for the bigger team, so everybody learns the collective lesson. That's how this should go. But the FIA, in all their infinite wisdom, have decided that I'm going to offer you a backdoor deal so nobody knows how much you've paid, nobody knows how much you've gone over, and then no one's going to know that you don't have to be punished. You're not going to lose any points, and you're not going to lose any budget cap off of next year. I think this is a cowardice move from the FIA. They need to make an example of Red Bull, and it's not fair. It takes away integrity from the sport massively, and I'm sure it makes other teams going, well, what's the point? If the bigger teams can overspend, what's the point in us even trying? Or, hey, why don't we just overspend by the minimum amount for a minor breach, so within 5%, and we'll just go into the back door going, yes, we're sorry, we won't do it again, get a minor slap, and just essentially sanction cheat. Because that's what this is. If there is no punishment, it's sanctioned cheating. Yeah, the FIA is encouraging teams to spend more money, at least the bigger teams that have the budget. It's okay to cheat. It's okay to go over budget, and it's not fair. I think Red Bull should definitely be punished for it. If that happens, who knows? It's taken them how long to just admit that, yes, Red Bull has broke the budget cap, and yes, they did go over, they will be punished, and yet there's no punishment. So I wouldn't be surprised that you don't hear me talk about this for the rest of the season, because there's going to be no news about it, in my opinion, that they're just going to sweep this under the carpet, go bad boys, and they're just going to move on. So, I mean, that's probably the last thing I'm going to have to say about that, because we're not going to hear anything about it again, because the FIA pampers the big guys. And as Lewis Hamilton said, either last season or the season before, cash is king. And in this case, it is speaking loud and clear. Let's move on to qualifying. Qualifying was one of those days where you needed an F1 calendar and a grid place penalty calendar as well. As for the actual qualifying itself, it was great. Fantastic day in Texas, nice and hot. I think it was 42 degree trackside. Just, in my opinion, as a viewer, perfect weather to watch racing. You know the weather is not going to affect the racing. It's going to be all drivers, all skill, and all speed all day. Now, taking that into consideration, there was a couple people, I believe it was four or five different drivers that had grid penalties coming into this race. Now, these were not grid penalties because of anything they had done in Japan or anything before the races. These were all part, like place replacement part penalties. So let's go through them. Checo Perez, he got a brand new power unit, so he got a 5-place grid penalty. Fernando Alonso also got a new power unit, a 5-place grid penalty. Charles Leclerc got a 10-place grid penalty because he replaced the new power unit, and he also got a new turbocharger, and as well that Esteban Ocon, oh, sorry, Joe Guan Yu also got a 5-place grid penalty just because of a hydro system replacement. And then Esteban Ocon will also start in pit lane, but we're going to tell you about that after qualifying. It is really, really, really important to know just because it's a they got penalized for it for grid points, and they also got a fine for it because this is one of the things that most teams are, and all the teams are not allowed to do, but it's also a real no-no, and it makes you look really shady, but we'll tell you about that after. Q1, again, nice weather. Nothing super, you know, nothing really super interesting happened in Q1. I mean, the fast guys were fast. Again, the slow guys were slow. Once the all the grid penalties were assessed, you're looking at your bottom five is Mick Schumacher, Nicholas Latifi in 17th, Joe Guan Yu in 18th, Yuki Tsunoda in 19th, Esteban Ocon in 20th. Now, I know it's really odd to say Esteban Ocon was dead last, even though Nicholas Latifi was on track. And no, Ocon did not crash or anything like that, but we're going to get to Esteban Ocon's penalty very last because it's one of the more important ones, and it's the one that they got fined for. Qualifying two, again, I mean, these guys, the track times were dropping by seconds, not half a second, not 10th of a second. These guys were dropping seconds off of the lap. From 11th to 15th, Gasly, Leclerc was in 12th, Kevin Magnussen in 13th, Fernando Alonso in 14th, and Danny Ric in 15th. Another tough weekend for Danny Ric. He's in the car, but he's not in the car, and it's not for a lack of trying. He just hasn't been able to get a hold of this car as it is for the entire season. They've done the tweaks. They've done the adjustments, they've done this, they've done that, and he's been behind the eight ball the entire season. So another unfortunate qualifying for him. He's out in Q2. It doesn't look like he's quit, but you can see the fire's starting to dim a little bit. He still doesn't have a seat for 2023. It doesn't sound like he will have a seat for 2023. The only other team that still doesn't have a seat is Haas and Gunther Steiner, who is the race director for Haas. The race operator has said all Daniel Ricciardo needs to do is just pick up the phone and he will have a seat in Haas essentially. But it's not looking too good. I mean, if I was Danny Ric, there'd be a massive conversation you'd need to have with myself going, do I want to drive for Haas just to say I'm in F1, or do I take a year off, see what happens, potentially come back in a year, take a break, clear mentally? You know, that sometimes that's the best thing for an athlete if they have the opportunity, is maybe you don't compete for a year. You get to relax, you clear your mind, you find out if you really do want to race anymore, and if you have that fire in your belly. So we'll see what Daniel Ric does, but 15th is not exactly the best place you want to be. Top 10 is your top 10 as it usually is, but a little bit different. Max and Perez, that you would think would be 1-2, just they had the pace, but they didn't have the pace. They have the downforce, they've got the straight line speed, but the corners in Austin for them, qualifying just didn't help them whatsoever. No mechanical issues, just they just didn't have the pace. Top 10 going from 10 to 1. Sebastian Vettel in 10th, Checo Perez in 9th, Alex Albon in 8th, Valtteri Bottas in 7th, Lando Norris is in 6th, again out qualifying Danny Ric. It seems like it looks easy for Lando Norris, but it's really not. That Ricciardo is still making Lando really work for it, but another out qualifying for Lando, this time in 6th. Stroll in 5th, great race from him. Russell and Hamilton 4th and 3rd, Max Verstappen in 2nd, and Carlos Sainz in 1st. So, like I said, the Red Bulls, I mean, they're there, but they're not there this weekend. They really tried. The wind is also not helping them. Massive, massive wind gusts in Austin. Like, sometimes there are, sometimes there aren't, but when there is wind gusts, it's blowing cars sideways and just putting the drivers on edge enough where they need to slow down where they normally wouldn't, which would affect track times, especially in qualifying, obviously. So let's go back to Esteban Ocon. The reason why he was in 20th, He actually would have placed in the top 10, as he normally would. But there needed to be some fixes in Esteban's car. So there's a certain time where you can put replacements on the car. You take your grid penalty. It would have been a 5-place grid penalty anyways. Sometimes there is a time you have to leave it. There's some times you get to fix it. But what the mechanics did, and this was under, you know, their boss's directive, is that the mechanics did replace some parts on Esteban's car while it was in Parc Ferme. Now, Parc Ferme is a specific time after qualifying and after the race where the cars are not allowed to be touched. It's kind of like they're in their safe space. And this is where if anything is illegal on the car or out of whack or broken that wasn't reported or so on and so forth, the stewards look over the cars. And that's the time that if anything, like I said, is wrong, is going to get caught. So in this case, Esteban's car was not in Parc Ferme. So there is a penalty towards that. And he got kicked to the bottom of the grid, as well as the team also received a 5,000 euro fine. It's happened a couple times when you need to replace parts. Now, the reason why this is such a sketchy thing is that there are no stewards or FIA representatives to see you switch the cars. It's not like it's in plain sight. This is after everybody's left. The cars are supposed to be cool and left alone. And you're working on your car essentially unattended. So this is where the sketchiness comes in, where you don't want to say a team has an opportunity or a chance of cheating or giving their car an edge that no one else has. And you also don't want to say that they're swapping out parts that maybe they're hoping won't go unnoticed to give them an edge. Maybe you swap out an extra part that you notice is a little worn down. So if you can just sneak that in, it'll help. I don't want to say that's what most teams are thinking, but that's what most teams are thinking. And for me as a fan and who know about the rules and regulations, and for those of you who are catching up and learning as you go about the rules and regulations as well, to me at least, it would cross our minds going, that seems a little sketchy, which is why the fine happens on top of it, which is also why all of a sudden he's starting at the back of the grid. So there are punishments for it, but still you try not to do it very often. It did help him for a bit. It did not help him for a bit, but still you don't want to touch your car in Parc Ferme. So that is our qualifying for the Austin Grand Prix. And let's get into the race itself. So before we get to the race, I need to tell you guys something. If you're a fan of Formula One or any kind of motor racing, just like I am, whether you've been a longtime fan or you're new into the sport, this place you guys absolutely have to visit next time you're in Calgary, Alberta. It's called Trax VR. And what this fine establishment is, and I will say this up front, they're not paying me. I'm not getting anything for free. There's no kickbacks. I just love this place. I went for the first time last night with a bunch of friends and family members. What it is, it is a virtual reality racing experience. And when I say it's an experience, I mean that wholeheartedly. The full VR system, if you've played it before, you get an idea of what it is, but this VR system is absolutely next level. You're sitting in racing seats. You've got a steering wheel that forms to your hand perfectly. These chairs move. When you're turning left, the chair moves left. When you're turning right, it moves right. You feel the bumps in the road. If you hit the gravel, you're vibrating like you're hitting the gravel. This place is amazing. It fits up to 12 people. You can literally almost fit your entire own grid as you race Formula One. They work you through it. You start in an oval for IndyCar, then you work you up through F2, F3, and then you hop into the F1 car, and the detail on the road for the scenery, your cockpit, you see the halo, the logos, the hands, everything is just absolutely amazing. The employees there have thousands of hours on these simulators, thousands of laps. Some of these guys even play esports on an amateur and a part-time professional level. These guys were amazing. It was absolutely so much fun. We did 3 or 4 races, and it feels like you're in the car. You've got your headphones on. You hear the rev of the engine when you need to change gears, your brakes. You can see when you've got a flat spot on your tires. You can get so detailed where you see the heat in your tires and you need to hit pit lane. Like, it is that amazing. The guys at Trax VR, super friendly. They work you through it and you don't have to know what you're doing. There was a couple of us that had never done VR racing before, and there were some guys that had done plenty of VR racing before, and they were helpful through and through. You know, slow down, turn left, turn right. You know, it's like, hey, you need to brake here, then hit the gas on this spot. It was an absolute blast. And a little bit, it's a little bit worrying for me because I'm an adult, unsupervised, who loves to buy F1 gear when he gets the opportunity. Well, when you walk into Trax VR, they have the biggest F1 merchandise collection in North America, if not, you know, like the world. Like, it's massive. They've got so much stuff in there, anything from racing hats to uniforms, jackets. They've got some Lego displays as well. And you're talking everything from the older Formula One all the way up to the 2022 designs, numbers. The merchandise is just amazing. So if you guys are ever in Calgary and you guys have a bunch of friends, a birthday party, just a group in general, or you want to go check it out for yourself, you need to go to Trax VR. It's an amazing experience. You need to go. So now to the race, the U.S. Grand Prix in Austin, Texas. We're talking 439,120 people in attendance. F1 record. If you were watching it, they rounded it up to 440,000 people. Actual numbers, a little bit less than that, but I love their enthusiasm. Round 19, the track, 56 laps, 20 turns, top speed, you can get up to 340 kilometers an hour, distance 5.5 kilometers. It's just an amazing track to watch. I mean, you're covering 5 kilometers in less than 2 minutes. That's how fast these guys are going. 5.5 kilometers in 2 minutes. The temperature this weekend, 42 degree trackside. But the major player, at least the beginning of the race, wind. Oh my God, was it windy for the race. They've got this massive U.S. flag at the Circuit of Americas. And it's reported to be like half the size of a football field, or at least it looks like it is. And it was fully waving like there was absolutely no tomorrow. That wind was out to play. But thankfully, it didn't make add too much havoc, actually, to the race. These guys have raced at this track before, some more than others, but definitely Lewis Hamilton, Carlos Sainz, Leclerc, Max, all of them, the front runners, essentially. They know how windy this track can get. They know how experienced they need to be so they don't spin out, they don't hit the wall, and they can keep the car on the track. And that is definitely what they did this race. It was amazing. And the excitement literally started from the first lap. We're talking lights out, ready to go. Max started in second. He had by far the best start that we have seen him have all season, especially on an American track. It was great. He was off to the races. Gets into first in front of Carlos Sainz. It was great. Everybody packs up on the first turn. It's almost a 90 degree turn going uphill. It's one of the more challenging turns that you have on the F1 circuit. Unfortunately, and I mean unfortunately, the curse of Ferrari has to hit again, and especially it has to hit Carlos Sainz. He's only been on pole 3 times this season, and he also hasn't finished 3 races every time he's been on pole. But at least this time he didn't hit gravel. No, he didn't hit gravel. He didn't spin out. He didn't hit the wall. No, George Russell hit him. What had happened was Sainz is trying to get past Max. He's trying to get into a better position off the apex of the first turn. George Russell's coming on the inside of the turn, and essentially what he does is he has absolutely nowhere to go because he's racing his teammate, Lewis Hamilton. He's going to turn left, and then Carlos just comes right in front of him, and Russell, through no fault of his own, just smashes into the side of his car, just smashes into the near the back end by the power unit of Carlos Sainz.